Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. It's at KAZU. This is broadcast number 558. It's August the 16th, 1982. I have to write the date down. It goes so fast. I don't know how one week from the other. It goes so quickly. There's a program on this station for local people who listened before called International Forum, and they were discussing problems and conflict in Lebanon. And I was going to discuss the Lebanon crisis and the Israeli role there. I put it off till next week because the large subject of Ronald Reagan and World War III and the Lebanon crisis I thought should come together. And I'll give some viewpoints that I have on the subject. And I mentioned to a gentleman here in the studio while the program was on that the discussion of what's going on with the heads of states in Israel or Egypt or Lebanon is very academic, and it's sort of like talking to the tooth fairy. It's a question of who's going to be in charge of the government, how far will they go, what is the future of the PLO. But the subject that is never brought out seriously and laid on the table surgically is the role of narcotics money, narcotics traffic, getting certain politicians in to flow the buck, whether it's through Afghanistan or the banks in Lebanon, and Israeli, the share of the narcotics that will throw through Lebanon, that they will have a piece of the profit to fund their arms if they need them later. The drug traffic is the largest single industry in the United States today. It's larger than any General Motors or Ford. Well, the motor companies are going bankrupt, but the flow of narcotics is a multi-billion dollar business, and I have the statistics at home, current ones, and they're always updated. And yet, how this money is made, how it gets to this country, how it flows, whether it flows from Southeast Asia, escalated during the Vietnamese War, Southeast Asian War, or from Pakistan, or Turkey, or Colombia, or Bolivia, or Mexico, the traffic flow is divided between certain heads of states. When Ronald Reagan was running for president against Jimmy Carter, I said you have the choice of two drug lords. You can either get the South American connection or the Middle East connection, and their tentacles go to the people who support these men, put them into office, the men such as Paul Laxalt and Frank Sinatra, with their close links to organized crime, or the links to Ronald Reagan's administration, or that Mr. Zipkin I talked about a few weeks ago, the gopher for Nancy Reagan. The drug people around Jimmy Carter was Mr. Jordan, Hamilton Jordan, and the Trujillo's connections in Panama, and over to Libya and the Middle East through various tentacles. The drug connection is divided as closely as the Cola Wars or the Pepsi-Cola Wars. There is a book out called The Cola Wars, describing the Pepsi-Cola group that line up with the Republicans, basically, and the Coca-Cola people. And the drug market is divided with candidates and public officials. And we'll talk next week. Hopefully, there won't be any major crisis, and I'll go into some of the details of the politics of Lebanon and Israel with regards to the drug market. Now, a book was advertised yesterday, in all the major newspapers, in the magazine of the major newspapers in the United States. It's called Conspiracy in Dallas. The author isn't listed here. It's Fairchild Publishing, $4, and you can write to Box 663, Wascom, Texas, WASKOM, Texas, 75692, $4. And the story, the blurb advertising the book says, now it can be told Lee Harvey Oswald was not the assassin of President John F. Kennedy or Officer J.D. Tippit. He was part of a conspiracy in the FBI and the CIA and the State Department. He played the role of an informant. Now, I've done almost 20 years this November of research on this subject. I'm anxious to get the book. It was just, as I say, advertised yesterday nationally. I'll read it, evaluate it, and give you a critique on it as soon as they send. I think they said the delivery is 4 weeks, so we have to wait for that, but I'll compare it to my research and see how it comes down. I've been very hard on the Vatican and the links of the Vatican to the mafia, again, the drug traffic, and the various banking institutions in the United States, and the Banco Ambrosiano collapsing and starting a major scandal around the world involving 230 banks. I'm going to get off their back for a while this evening. I'm going to lay off the Vatican financial crisis and talk about the periphery relating to it and tell you there is a new book coming out. It was written in the New York Times, not the Washington Post, New York Times, August the 7th. Holt, Reinhardt, and Winston, they're publishing a book by Richard Hammer, and it's called The Vatican Connection, the astonishing account of a billion-dollar counterfeit deal between the mafia and the church. Now, we know, as I left off the program last week, and it's still true, the Vatican has signed notes for 1.2 or 4 billion in Panama banks, 10 banks that are dummy fronts, and also Mr. Marcinkus of the Vatican, the chief treasurer, resigned from the Nassau Bahama Bank when the scandal broke. But in addition to Mae Brussel doing this work, there are many people putting these pieces together. I hope you don't think that I'm anti-Catholic or anti-Jewish or anti-Mormon. And I'm really going to hit the Jewish dope dealers in Israel next week and their role in narcotics traffic and their interest in this war of dividing the narcotic traffic in the Middle East with Lebanon when they cling out the PLO. But this particular book that's coming out goes into the fact that there are mafia connections, counterfeit stock, billions of dollars floating around, and they locate, according to a mention of this book, it has to do with a scandal in Munich, Germany, and many hundreds of millions will be described in this book. There's just a brief mention of it apropos of the New York Times articles this week. Also in the New York Times, there is a story, the U.S. inquiry into 1973 at the Vatican Bank is disclosed. Now, 2 weeks ago, I had on the air the scandal of the Vatican and Paul Marcinkus and Mr. Menini, the Vatican financiers, being involved with a bank in New Jersey. And I'll do more on that bank in a few minutes. But 1967, they were involved with putting $30 million from Rome into these banks and then giving interest, low interest or no interest at all loans to FBI agents in New York, in New Jersey, and in Miami, which are the hubs of the drug traffic they were at the time, pouring in from New York and New Jersey and Miami. And the FBI was being paid off with loans that they didn't have to pay back, and one expose, just one New York Times article mentioned a $1 million loan, but goodness knows how many. So in 1967, there were the same people that are being served warrants now involved in bank in New Jersey. In 1973, prior to the Watergate arrests, there was an investigation into by the FBI into organized crime and into certificates that were forged, and it involved Archbishop Marcinkus. His name emerged in tape recordings and wire recordings, and he was linked to mafia connections and drug traffic as early as 1973. As I say, he was linked in 67, but again in 73, and Richard Nixon's administration put the lid on it. Well, Michael Sindona, who's now in jail and involved with Marcinkus and the Vatican, had allegedly offered $1 million to Marie Stans and Richard Nixon, and there's no reason to believe they didn't take it. So in 1967, the New York Times was writing about Paul Marcinkus. In 1973, they were. Then 1974, the Franklin National Bank broke in New York City with $45 million missing. Now, the Bank Ambrosiano in Italy has collapsed. The Milan Bank has collapsed. They're going to start over with a new bank, and they're very original. They're going to call it the Nuovo Banco Ambrosiano. Nuovo means new in Italian. I guess the same, almost the same in Spanish, the Nuovo Ambrosiano. I'm sure that somebody's going to figure out it's the same Ambrosiano. They didn't change the name. One other article that came out of New Solidarity before I get off the subject was that Margaret Thatcher was in Rome, Italy, and was asked by a newsman about the links of the Bank of London to Roberta Calvi and laundering dirty mafia money through the Grandmother Lodge of England, headed by the Queen of England's cousin, the Duke of Kent. Margaret Thatcher got very angry at the interview, of course, and the report says, Calvi expose shakes Maggie. It isn't very often that somebody from the news media can confront Margaret Thatcher about the murder in London of Roberta Calvi, and because the British banks are missing so much money, it must be a very sensitive subject to all of them, and we've talked about some of those scandals. Last week I talked about Helene Von Damm getting a promotion, and I want to mention one article about her in the paper this week. Helene Von Damm is the personal secretary to Ronald Reagan. She's now been promoted to make the appointments of the White House. She's the director of presidential personnel. She's got this new appointment. And Jack Anderson mentioned in a column of his that the Republicans and people in Washington close to Ronald Reagan are angry at Helene Von Damm. She's only been there a couple of years in Washington. She was out here 8 years with Ronald Reagan at his right hand, making appointments. But she's getting the Republicans worked up and angry at her appointments. And he cited one person, I don't know who he is, in Boston, that she promoted, a man by the name of Albert O'Neill, Albert Dapper O'Neill. And she insisted that he become the U.S. Marshal in Boston. And the gist of the Jack Anderson article was that Helene Von Damm is ambitious and pulling too much weight, outspoken and ambitious. It took a long time. She's been in public life about 10 years now, or tried to hide, but they're finally catching on. Well, I mentioned on the air that Helene Von Damm's second husband is a banker in Germany, and that her current husband, Byron Leeds, is living, the second husband, pardon me, is in Germany. He's a banker in Germany. And her third husband, Byron Leeds, that she married last year, is in New Jersey. And I wrote Helene a letter this week. I don't think she'll appreciate it, but I think it's pertinent, and I think it's time that somebody speak up in this country and let those people know that we know who they are, and we know their background, and we want more about them. So I wrote August the 8th to Helene Von Damm, in care of the White House, that's where her appointment office is, and this is what I said. Dear Helene Von Damm, I read in the Los Angeles Times, May 13th, 1981, that your second husband, Christian Von Damm, was a German international banker, and he still is. This same article mentioned your third husband, Byron Leeds, who lives in New Jersey. Would you please tell me, a simple taxpayer, I didn't say we're paying her salary, I said a simple taxpayer, and a curious researcher, which bank or banks Christian Von Damm is affiliated with? Because there are many scandals, I didn't put this in the letter, of course, but I want to know what banks in Germany he works for or which bank. And then I said I would appreciate knowing what city your current husband, Byron Leeds, lives in. I want to know whether it's Newark or which city in New Jersey he lives in, because she was protecting Raymond Donovan, as Secretary of Labor, and he has a list of crime syndicate friends going down to the Cosa Nostra, the Genoveses, the Gambinos. And I want to know what headquarters Byron Leeds lives in, and then we can locate more about where he works. I didn't ask her that. I put in the letter, every American citizen should be informed of these two important persons. Because of your close association with Raymond Donovan, I said that, and with Roy Cohn and Lynn Nofziger, I am not certain of your personal background. She's a business partner in property with Lynn Nofziger, and he was the liaison of John Mitchell to the Nazi Party out here in California and around the country during the election of Richard Nixon. I continued, as an appointed official of the Reagan administration, and she is appointed, she's not elected, with close ties to the Italian-Argentine Licio Gelo, Ronald Reagan's ties, it is important to know what German bank or banks and New Jersey contacts you keep. I think you can see my concern. As I understand, you were secretary for Otto Albrecht von Bolschwing. He was a Nazi that came over here with the OSS and the CIA. How many Reinhard Gehlen agents permeated this nation, and how far does it go? Does it go to the White House selection of appointments? I am sending a copy of this letter to President Ronald Reagan. Members of Congress should be informed of these past 100% Nazi ties, especially with the appointment of J. Peter Grace recently. Thank you in advance for your honesty. I'm sure you have nothing to hide, espionage related, especially with William Clark, counterintelligence agents from Vienna and Switzerland. He brought her to this country. Do I sound concerned about this in D.C.? You bet I am. So any letter from you about your two husbands will satisfy my possible paranoia that your appointments could be Nazi related. Thank you, May Brussel. Now, in lieu of that, I mailed that August the 8th, and in the San Francisco Chronicle this morning, following along those lines, there's a bitter fight in the White House. Alexander Haig said that there were guerrilla warfare against him, and he's out. But the fighting of the teams, of the espionage links and the assassination teams, are tangling each other for power. And there's a long article today on the bitter fight in the White House, and this is very important because they will actually literally drop Ronald Reagan. He'll go bananas over this conflict, and something has to happen soon because there literally is no president making decisions, and the conflict is between James Baker, the chief of staff, who is a campaign manager of George Bush, who has close relations, the family with the Hinckley family. James Baker became the head of staff for Ronald Reagan, and Edwin Meese, who's the White House counselor. And this article says that President Reagan today is so isolated from the workings of the White House that he's unaware of the depth of the problems. Now, last week I read the article about the Pope, that he was so removed from the religious people in Rome and running the Vatican that he's not aware of what is going on there. That was the article from the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post. This article says the struggle between these officials is going to result in greater power for Baker or his departure or in Meese, but it can't be either ways. We've got to make changes because the administration is in trouble and they have some hard choices coming up. They are in trouble, and it's coming down from every place, that's true. But these men, neither one is going to solve it. But to let Baker win is to give the White House to George Bush and get ready to ease Reagan out. And as soon as he wins the election as a front, if he wins the next election, then his demise will follow quickly afterwards, or he's just a figurehead. This article says that there is no unity in the White House. He has doubts that Ronald Reagan is aware of the situation. I think he's pretty isolated. A handful of people provide information they want to provide, and nobody's in charge. This article's from the LA Times, Jack Nelson, who covers the Washington scene. He said, "We've got four guerrillas and no one in charge." Alexander Haig says there's a guerrilla warfare there. Now, the LA Times is saying we've got four guerrillas and no one is in charge. I don't know why I'm laughing, but except that Ronald Reagan was never presidential material anyway, and how the American people ever let him in, I'll never know. It says, in fact, you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody here who's happy. That's unhealthy in any White House. Well, the only man who's happy is Ronald Reagan. He gets on the helicopter and he smiles on Friday. He comes back on Sunday, he smiles. Everywhere he goes, he has this sick grin from ear to ear, as if he's never had more fun and never been more happy. And yet the domestic scene, the international scene, the cabinet scene is coming apart, and now they're having to admit the problems everywhere. David Stockman would give a figure of a deficit of $115 billion to the president, knowing it was $140 billion, and the president wasn't told about it. The president's not getting information, and he might have to leave Stockman and Donovan out and Watt after the elections of the senators and congressmen that are coming up this November. Well, this bitter fight is really a fight not so much between Republicans fighting each other, but it's between people like Helene Von Dahm and the major spy agencies that have worked their way up. George Bush was director of the CIA. He's sitting right there behind Baker, or Baker's his front man. And what you're getting is the conflict of the elected president, no matter how bad he is, the appointments made by a woman who worked with the Galen operation, the chief of staff working for George Bush of the CIA, so that the spy network, equivalent to, say, the KGB or the Gestapo, wants to strangle this country, lead it to World War III, this idiotic old senile president going back and forth munching his jelly beans, and a few old hands holding on to the system and trying to hold it together to make it look like a government that functions. The European governments are ignoring us. There are riots in the Philippines. They're gunning down their people. Our allies in South Africa killed 130 people last week. The government in South Korea is collapsing from scandal. The El Salvadorian government is more sadistic than ever. And next week, when I talk about Reagan and World War III and which countries he wants to send money to, while we're getting totally bankrupt in this country, they're all gunning their people down on the streets in a fanatic anxiety to hold the fort, and they cannot spend all their capital on making World War III. It won't work. So that there's this frenzy with the people we call our allies trying to hold their thrones, and each one of them is coming unglued while the President of the United States has four guerrillas in the White House that aren't even telling him what's going on. Now, getting back to that bank that I mentioned 2 weeks ago, the FBI agents got unsecured loans. That had to do with Archbishop Mesinkas and Luigi Manini from the New York Times article in 1976. And in 1973, they were also suspect at the time. Now, who is Licio Gelli and why is he important? I mentioned that Licio Gelli is tied to Roberto Calvi in Italy, the man that was just killed. Gelli headed Mussolini's Secret Service, the right arm of his fascist terror group, the equivalent of the Gestapo. He fought with Franco in Spain. When the war was over, he went down to South America. And then the Duke of Kent, the Queen's cousin, brought him back to Italy, where he was running the government and putting that fascist government behind the elected officials that the CIA, even those people, had put in power. Now, I use names, but I'm going to get a little more graphic tonight, because sometimes just throwing names to you doesn't mean very much. And I'm going to give some quotations from a book written in 1961 called Hitler's Heirs. Paul Mescal wrote it. It's a book about where are the people in 1961 that Hitler particularly worked with, and what countries did they go to. And this book has 100 that it refers to. Now, I'm just going to talk about one man, because he was active in the Republican Party in 1942 and 1956. He was a President Eisenhower's inauguration in 1957, just as Licio Gelli was at Ronald Reagan's, and they all worked together. Was there is 1981 inauguration in January. This gentleman was the head of a Nazi group in Hungary. He ran concentration camps before he came to this country. He ran concentration camps in Hungary. And he got a passport, again, out of Naples by the American Vice Consul. He was a war criminal. In 1947, when the war was over, he arrived in the port of New York, where he got a job at a bank in New Jersey called the National State Bank in Newark, New Jersey. Now, I'm trying to find out if that particular bank is changed names, because the Security National Bank of New Jersey was linked to the Vatican and the people I've been mentioning. But there was another bank. He came right out of Hungary. He used the American Vice Consul to get him a passport, and he worked as an accountant at the National Bank and worked his way up in the Republican Party. Now, who was this man? His name is Laszlo Imre Ag, A-G-H. 53 years old in 1961. He was in Scott Plains, New Jersey. Okay, what did they have about him? The information about this man was, and witnesses recognized him and brought the attention of the American government, came from Israel and from Hungary. They said he participated in performing activities contrary to civilization and attempting to degrade, humiliate, injure, maim, and kill workers on labor force battalions at the camps in Hungary. Testimony taken from 33 people in the United States, Canada, and Israel said Aj beat and tortured and murdered hundreds of slave workers. He was accused of causing 25 persons to drown in the icy Danube on a single day in December of 44. He sent inmates on death marches in sub-zero weather with inadequate shoes and clothing. He ordered merciless beatings and personal whippings, and the more prominent prisoners, including his former employer and several rabbis. Witnesses said he made prisoners do push-ups over upturned bayonets until they bled to death with the sharp needles. He maimed them or killed them, and another favorite sport was to have the inmates clean the camp toilets with their tongues. This is a man at Eisenhower's inauguration, active in the Republican Party in Cleveland, in New York, in New Jersey. Okay, you get the picture? Brought here from the American Council in 1947. On other occasions, he buried prisoners to their neck in the ground and kicked their heads until they lost consciousness. Aj says he claimed he was a victim of communism, The communists were smearing him, and his associations with the Hungarian freedom fighters were legitimate. The various freedom fighters said that they were the most damning witnesses against him. He fraudulently got his passport to this country in 1947. He claimed his residence was in Austria and Czechoslovakia and not in Hungary. He was active in the GOP. He worked in the Republican Party from the time he was working at that bank. He was brought to a bank in Newark, New Jersey, the National State Bank. He worked for the GOP, as I say, in 1952 and 57, attended President Eisenhower's inauguration. This is the same president who was over there fighting a war to end this kind of thing. And the investigators learned that he was arrested in Hungary going back to 1939 for clandestine Nazi activities. He worked with the Hitler Youth in Hungary before the country ever fell. He helped it collapse. In recent years, American representatives have tried to help him. Notorious people who also were identified later as war criminals came to his aid. There were committees raising money from New Jersey, Cleveland, New York, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, to keep him in this country. Friends of Og, A-G-H. And there was a lot of money, and he was residing in Nutley, New Jersey. Now, Nutley, New Jersey, I believe, is the headquarters of Raymond Donovan. So in Newark, New Jersey, we have two banks where there was a common denominator between these people, too, and between the FBI allowing them to come to this country. I'll just mention it for about 5 minutes before we take the break. In the book, The Kennedy Conspiracy by Paris Flammond, he discusses the Hungarian freedom fighters. That's the group that this Og came over with, and the links to the Centro Mondiale Commerciale, that's in Rome, where Clay Shaw, he ran the International Trademark down in New Orleans, where Lee Harvey Oswald was working and associated in espionage. Getting back to that book that's coming out, we'll see if it includes this part. Clay Shaw was in the OSS. He worked with Italian fascists. He supported the paramilitary right in Europe and then became part of the CIA. And then into this country came to New Orleans, a Hungarian, George Mandel. And then J. Edgar Hoover brought Franck Nagy, the former Hungarian premier, into Dallas, Texas. And he was working with various people from the Fascist International. At the time that John Kennedy was killed, the premier of Hungary was in Dallas. As a matter of fact, there was a man alongside of Jack Ruby who was not suspect, but was looked at. He wasn't part of the police department when Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald. And if you look at the testimony and the radio clips when Oswald was first killed by Jack Ruby, there was a question, who was that man with Ruby? And they said the Hungarian. And in the Torbit document, the story of Permandex and the links of Rome and Otto Skorzeny, and this again ties to Licio Gelli at Ronald Reagan's inauguration, are these Hungarian freedom fighters who were doing the kind of things I read on the air tonight. I have a library of about 1,000 books on Nazi Germany, and I don't often go into such graphic detail, but when I refer to the banks in New Jersey or the GOP or the passports written by Americans or touting these people as freedom fighters, this country is ruptured by two groups. One are the legitimate people of the GOP who have no idea this is going on, or of the Democratic Party. And then there's the spy group that has taken over that invisible government that's become visible, particularly since the murder of John Kennedy. All these people were involved in the murder of Kennedy. In fact, the book, The Kennedy Conspiracy, that Flammond writes about, names all the people in this particular chapter of the Hungarians, the Romans, and so forth, the people from Rome and Milan, that were later working closely with Richard Nixon, or constantly since World War II. And what was Franck Nagy doing in Dallas? Don't forget that Richard Nixon lost the election to John Kennedy in 1960, and that murder made it possible for Richard Nixon, their boy, to become president till Ronald Reagan, their boy, could get the seat. There is a linear connection between these people, and they're working everywhere. I just cite two banks in the same city, multiply it, and in another week or two after I discuss the war problem, we'll talk about the banks that are collapsing. I think they're collapsing from the inside, and this is part of the intent to weaken America. We'll take a 1 minute break now and go on to some other pleasant subjects related to the above.
And this is KAZU Pacific Grove, listener-supported radio at 90.3 FM for the greater Monterey Bay Area.